Yes, Randy.
We're good.
Forget it.
We're
All
good.
right. All right. Welcome to the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast, the post why Oeming edition. Emphasis on why. Why did we play that way for three quarters? Why did we wait until the fourth quarter to explode? For TV ratings, folks, that's why. Sark did this, he sandbagged. It was smart. He was trying to teach the team a lesson about fourth quarter effort. No, I don't know. I don't know. That's all nonsense. It's all
So,
post game justification.
so I can't be right 2 weeks in a row.
That's right. That's right. Anyway, that's the most important thing. It's not that Texas win or achieve. It's that Randy and I be right.
Not
All right, what's going on, Randy?
much, man. Not much.
Are you glad we didn't do an immediate post game reaction?
Probably a good idea.
That was
Probably
probably
a
a good
good idea.
idea. I was a little pissy, and I would have had a little pissy podcast. Now I've relaxed and I've watched the film, rewatched it, and it raises a couple of questions, but for the most part, it was about what I expected. Just in terms of lack of intensity, lack of focus, not getting some adjustments in quickly, and then turning it on and being like, oh, where was that for three quarters of dread?
Yeah, I
What are your
just like the
thoughts?
thing, the frustrating thing is you just, everybody, the, fans this, and they appear to show up and bring it, and then didn't quite get rewarded until about 2.5 hours later. But
They got rewarded with a sweet LED and drone light show, Randy.
I did see that. That was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool.
Was the coolest part of the game up until that point.
Yeah, when our AI masters take over, I'm looking forward to really interesting shows like that to keep us placated. All right. You want to talk about the defense first?
Sure.
All right. My take on it is there was one bad drive and one bad play. Other than that, the defense was very good.
I would agree. I was surprised that they were only 4-14 on fourth down. I guess you take into account that they converted three on that one drive with a fourth down, and that's why. But yeah, bad fits on that one play, which happens, but shouldn't. And then, yeah, one bad drive. The only thing I would say is just, I mean, Wyoming's offensive line held up a lot better than I thought they were going to, but it is a bunch of grown men that have played a lot of football together. So they handled a lot of our choreographed dance stunts that look like a bunch of guys running to where they were supposed to be coached to be instead of, okay, I'm supposed to loop around and then play football instead of I'm supposed to loop around and, okay, I occupy this guy. That's for about three quarters. That's just sort of what I gathered is they were X's and O's moving where they were supposed to be instead of people with eyes and football players.
Yeah, I what was interesting about the defense is you're always hyper intense and hyper sensitive to the defense when the offense isn't doing anything.
Right.
So if Texas had 38 points on the board, you would have been like, we were good on third down.
Yeah.
But you
But you were.
notice every excruciating conversion when the
Well,
offense is not playing, right?
you were two more bad run fence away from being in trouble.
Yes, that's right. Well, you'll notice that they took Mr. Hill off the field until the fourth quarter. So just a quick explanation, if you guys aren't Inside Texas subscribers, and if you're not, why aren't you? I kind of broke down what happened on that play, the Harrison Whaley touchdown run. And we had Vernon Broughton in on that play side, and Wyoming actually doubled the backside. They doubled Tavondre Sweat. And I think that might have given Hill a false read. I think he might have been reading that and he abandoned his gap. And young linebackers, particularly, they get nervous and sort of like, I need to do something sitting and watching a run play develop. So what they'll do is they'll take what I call false steps. And usually those false steps are one direction. The worst thing they can do is false step forward because once you commit to a gap and then you get caught up in the trash, you're now useless. Like basically that guy's going to run through your vacated gap. Vernon Broughton got beat one-on-one. He got too high, got his shoulders turned. Simultaneous to that happening in the box, Ryan Watts was in man coverage, press man. The Wyoming receiver didn't even try to block. He sold it like he was running a route, which was pretty smart because Watts would have just manhandled him and might have
Right.
gotten in on the tackle.
That's his best
So
shot at blocking him.
And Watts's job, when you're in press man, your job is to not look at anything else in the world but the dude in front of you. So he didn't do anything wrong. He noticed too late to make a run on the, you know, to make a attempt on the tackle. And then simultaneous to all that happening in the box, Jaron Thompson was backing that up. He's rotating to the middle of the field away from where the run broke as the ball was snapped. That was a call. That wasn't Jaron Thompson like freestyling. He sees what's happening. Whaley's on him really quick. And frankly, Jaron Thompson doesn't have the foot speed to recover. And that's how he housed it. So that was the play. So it is how one bad run fit, you know, there's sort of a cascade of errors there.
Yeah. Yeah. Multiple things lead to it. But yeah, if you know, he's slow on bailing to the middle, or he's earlier on bailing to the middle, then he may see it and have a chance to make up for it.
17-yard gain.
Right. Yeah, it's a big run, but it's not 67. But yeah, I mean, like I said, that's an interesting point you made about I'd like to know what the rule is there on on whether he did get sucked in by maybe they gave him a false read or not. Cause there are, I mean, a lot of run schemes are designed for that, but it just takes you back to the whole thing where, you know, if something looks too good to be true, there's probably something coming the other way.
Yeah. And yeah, believe me, I coach 10-year-olds in flag football and I learned that every Saturday. The reverse still very, very effective on 10-year-olds. Yeah. Just so you know,
I can imagine, but yeah, the old guard trap play. That was the big harping point when I was in high school. It's like, if your guy doesn't block you, there's a reason.
Yes. Yeah. You know, it's interesting what reinforces that. If y'all are real football nerds and you want to watch this, there's some you don't have to recycle your DVR watch. There's YouTube cut-ups online now. Nash on Texas, I think, is the guy. He does a great job. That guy's a good guy. And he does cut-ups. You can go look at it. But the second play of the game, Tavondre Sweat whips the guy in front of him and gets deep penetration. But he doesn't locate the ball. And he gets too deep. And then Wyoming, the running back, they have enough depth when they hand it off. If you notice, Wyoming had pretty good depth when they line up to run the ball. He sees that and just runs and cuts back into Tavondre's vacated space, even though the play was blocked to go the other way. And he got 6 yards. And it should have been second and 14, right? So that's one of those things where it's just sort of a rule on the D-line. And you could do this against true spread teams because they're lined up a little more shallow and there's not a lot going on there. It's inside zone or it's outside zone usually, right? And so when you get penetration, usually you'll encounter the back in the backfield. Wyoming was teaching their guys like pause, take a look, and then if they're penetrating, punish them for it. And so I thought that threw us for a little bit of a loop early, and then we adjusted to it well and did a good job. But that's an interesting rule for defensive linemen. So people say, well, what do you do then? Well, if you whip your guy and you're getting penetration, but you can't find the ball yet, stop.
Yeah, stay flat.
Stay flat, find the ball, and then run laterally. Don't try to run upfield. That running back is a faster, better athlete than you are. So
defensive tackles being more than 2 yards upfield normally doesn't end well unless they're on a collision course for something.
Yeah, I mean, if they –
But they're not catching anybody.
No. And, you know, if you're getting doubled and you split it, odds are the back's coming and you're going to destroy him in the backfield. But other than that, be very wary of space and you know, just chasing blindly up the field. But
do you think that played into why we were as accepting of the 5 yard out barrage later in the game? Fear of that or just in general? Because I think we're kind of susceptible to it anyway, just personnel wise. Our safeties kind of have to take the risk to make the play, I think. I don't think they can react to it speed-wise.
So Jaron is a 4-6 guy, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just the reality of it. And most of those little quick outs. So people are saying, why don't you have the corners press up? Those are actually switches.
Yes.
So the way they're lining up, you have to switch. They kept getting Jadae Barron off the slot, which you need to get Jadae Barron off your slot. Yeah. And then that coverage goes to the safety and he's got to get over. And our safeties weren't getting over in time. And Wyoming, to their credit, that was the one route that they could throw. And Svoda, actually, the big dude, like had a nice live arm on that route. They did a good job. The other guy was Keaton Crawford, who's faster and could get over there, but he's, per usual, he would mistime the ball and not make a play on the ball correctly. So that's what that's
true. He was there. You're right. He was there a couple times, just didn't.
Yeah. And it was frustrating because you're kind of, again, you don't give a damn if the offense has 31 points on the board while that's going on. Right.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. If you want to go 10 minutes down the field when you're down by 21, which is sort of where I was on the last of the game, other than, I mean, sure, that's fine. It looks, I guess you're enjoying yourself, but it doesn't impact the game in any way whatsoever. But yeah, like I said, it's just the thought in the back of your head of, hey, what if I didn't think they were going to pop one, but I also didn't think they were going to pop the first one. So,
yeah, well, and I think that was the frustration. And the other only other issue I had with the D was the big long drive, more how it started. So the situational football, Wyoming, it's 10-10. Wyoming gets the ball on their 4-yard line. It's their backup quarterback. They're on the road. Craig Bohl is the coach. Okay.
We played that way too soft. You're 100% right.
They are not throwing the ball out of their own end zone. And they ran the ball 3 consecutive times and they got 6 yards, 4 yards, and 5 yards. 3 for 15. Now they're out of their own end zone. And guess what they do on their third successful, after their third successful run? Throw the ball and they get a 20-yard gain. Their longest of the game. And suddenly they're cooking with gas. They feel good. Hey, we're moving. And, you know, I think you throttle that thing in the crib, right? I'm not saying, you know, Todd Orlando it, but freaking you can have your guys attack and penetrate and you can bring run blitzes and you can stone those runs and put it into 2nd and 12 or 3rd and 11, right?
Very true.
What do you think?
No, I agree. I would have stomached a, hey, we were aggressive there and gave up an explosive pass play but it goes back to what we kind of talked about. Hey, what do they want to do? They want to run the ball and get out of there. Well, don't let them, make him make a throw and beat somebody. I think you can trust your secondary in that situation to not give up a, 96-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
If they did hit one, it was going to be like a 20-yarder over the middle or something. And like, hey, well, hat tip to you. All right, now we're going to make you go score. But yeah, I agree. I think we kind of let him off the hook there.
Jadai Barron, is he a demigod?
Freak. I don't know what he is, but that dude's a football player.
Is it possible someone like Zeus came down and had relations with his mom?
Like he has extra arms or something.
He's like, amazing.
At one point, I swear he was fighting off a blocker with two arms, and he was making a tackle on the receiver with two arms at the same time.
While getting held.
I don't know, man. The amount of tackles for loss he makes in addition to everything else is nuts. And I'm normally, big, hey, don't just bump the guy and wrap him up. But when he just basically just shoved the Wyoming receiver down to the ground on that 3rd and 5 and got when they run the 3-yard out for no reason. And he just kind of shoved him and stared at him. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty dominant right there.
That'll work.
He just sort of stared at the sideline like, you're not getting it on me today, boys.
No, I think he finished with 9 tackles. He ended up leading us in tackles.
And they avoided him as much as they humanly could.
They were avoiding him purposely. They were running little rub routes, right? He still had 3 pass breakups. He had 2 pass breakups and then sort of he showed on a route and made the guy like hold it. And that was part of the reason Sorrell got the sack. But he's an unbelievable football player. The funniest part about being a nickel is when Wyoming would go big, they'd go to 13 personnel or 12. He goes off the field. We take our best DB off the field in certain lineups. And I kind of almost want to just roll him back to safety and just keep him.
We need to take a look at that and figure out I'm sure he's talented enough to play corner against one of those guys. Roll him back to safety, have a robber type deal or something. But yeah, we need to have some sort of an answer for that in case later in the year, somebody is having success by essentially running an offense that forces us to take him off the field. So yeah, a package to where he goes somewhere else would probably serve us well.
Do you remember how Nathan Vasher could play nickel, corner, and safety? I think Barron
he could have probably punted if you'd have wanted him to.
For sure. Yeah, yeah. I could have been a great receiver if you ever saw his high school highlights. But
also true. I think he was a great receiver.
Yeah.
He was just better at
he just played defensive back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think Barron could be that guy. Like if we ever just wanted to trot him out at safety against a pass heavy team and just give them a completely different look, that would be very interesting. If you want to get more foot speed out there. Because our safeties, to your point, I mean, it didn't kill us. Again, we're...
No, absolutely not.
Wyoming threw 28 times for 136 yards.
Right. Like, I mean, there was some stupid stat where like 22 of his pass attempts were within 9 yards of the line of scrimmage.
Yes. So. Yeah. That's what I was writing up. And I just, you know, it just becomes more frustrating and death by a thousand cuts when your offense isn't doing anything, right?
Correct.
So, you know, it is what it is. Hey, by the way, props to Jaren Thompson. Because he did, when they went to the well one more time, Jaren, I think, had been told, and I think also he was pretty familiar with that route concept by then. Yeah, and he went and housed it. That was nice.
Yeah, at that point, that's a prime opportunity to take that risk. I mean, you've seen it enough. You've sort of learned that, I don't think they're going to do anything else here.
All right. You ready to talk about the offense?
Sure.
All right. Well, that was a teaser because I'm not going to let you talk about the offense yet. I'm going to talk about someone who's always on the offense for his clients, and that is Gabe Winslow, mortgage man extraordinaire. I'm not just saying that. It's actually on his business card, and he spelled extraordinaire correctly, which is very impressive. I don't think I could do it. It's a French word, Randy.
I'm spelling in my head right now.
Can you spell it?
I don't like my chances.
The ending of it is different than you would think.
Spelling in a
A-I-R-E.
Yeah. Spelling math are two things that I got. I used to be good at, and computers and technology have completely ruined me on that.
Yeah.
I'll reach for a calculator before I trust myself on anything.
My handwriting has actually regressed ever since the computer age has dawned in my life.
Also, as an adult, getting a math problem wrong has a little bit different consequences than your sixth grade math test.
So. Yeah, you end up with a letter from the IRS.
Yeah, exactly. Or a meeting.
Well, now that we've tangented slightly, let me talk about mortgages. And he'll always get the math right, and he'll spell everything correctly as long as you do that on your application. You can reach Gabe at 832-557-1095. Gabe is really good at what he does. Over 20 years in the industry, he's got a law degree. He's been on the title side. Basically, there are mortgage guys who can do more than just quote the rate. There's guys who can actually plan how you can execute this thing to your best advantage. He understands the market timing. He understands all the component parts. And believe me, Murphy's Law applies to mortgages as much as anything in the world. There's always something that goes wrong. Having a mortgage guy that can actually get in the process and fix it is a massive advantage. So give him a call, 832-557-1095. All right, ready to talk offense?
Yes.
All right, the Texas offense, as best I can tell, was two explosive plays. A Jonathan Brooks run and a Xavier Worthy pass, which was pretty amazing display of athleticism on the sideline. He looked like a young Randy Boone out there.
That's false, but that dude, he looked like Tyreek Hill is who he looked like.
He did look like Tyreek Hill. That was wild.
I knew he was fast. I don't know if I knew he was that fast. I mean, that dude was gone.
Dude, his acceleration, once he gets going, it is nuts. And to straddle that sideline and not step out as you're accelerating, unbelievable. Just shocking. Shocking big playability, and we needed every bit of it. If you take out those two plays, Randy, the Texas offense averaged 4.1 yards per play. And that's despite the fact that the running game, even if you take out Jonathan Brooks' long run, his 61 yarder, he averaged over 5 yards per run on his other carries. So sort of demands the question, hey, why didn't we just line up and run the ball when Wyoming showed their three safety look?
This is a game where you probably know the answer to why, but I would have liked to have seen Ewers like 11 of 15 for 131.
The receivers weren't in on that game plan.
No.
I mean,
they also dropped a couple, but
yeah.
Hey, Sark says we can win a game any way we want, right? Multitude of ways.
Yeah.
They're going to line up like that. You got the hostage to just turn around and make them make you stop.
Well, and what's also interesting is, so I agree with you 100%. Two things in Sark's defense. One, I think that we would have tried to run the ball more had we gotten more, first downs, right? Mm-hmm. So when you start off a series first and 15 instead of first and 10, it screws up all of your running game rhythm because the run game is about positive gain, positive gain, positive gain, and then you bust one, right?
Yep.
When you're first and 15, you're off track. You got to throw the ball or the run is going to get you to second and 11 or second and 10. And now you're back in a passing down. So one thing. Second thing, when we had three false starts, two on Hayden Connor, one on Christian Jones. The second thing is if you can't convert third and three and third and four, your run game doesn't get the opportunity for a new set of sticks and the opportunity to keep bearing down on it and wear on that defense. So there is kind of a virtuous circle to offense. And, you know, that all said, would I have liked to have seen us make a more concerted effort to run the ball? Yes, particularly when they come out in that defense. I think that should be our first default response to that defense.
Yep.
The second default response to me might seem counterintuitive, but you actually have to spread it out.
I was going to say, I didn't see a whole lot of empty.
No, you actually need to spread it out and overload those three wides. And you can run all posts, you can run all verticals, but you could also just run the ball also from four wide, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, because Wyoming was not going to allow our receivers one-on-ones, right? Or at least deep. So if you keep putting receivers on the field, they'll keep putting DBs on the field.
Yep.
And then you can turn around and hand off the ball. So it seems counterintuitive, but that's another way to run the ball. You don't have to go out in 13 personnel.
And there's been a bunch made, and Rod's talked about it, and a bunch of other people talked about like condensed formations and bunching people up and the stress that it puts on coverage personnel. That's basically what the 3-3-5 is designed to guard against.
Yeah.
You could do whatever you want with those three guys up there. We have the personnel to make it not hurt us as bad. You know, you're not going to give up the A.D. Mitchell switch, I got inside leverage post route out of that defense. So I agree. I think you spread it out and try to get a little bit bigger, a little better picture. And then, if you just turn around and hand it off and make them stop you.
So I want to dig in on this, Randy, because I think this is something maybe the average or casual fan doesn't understand, because they're kind of like, why is this a problem for Sark? And there's a lot of reasons, and some of it has to do with inexperience, and maybe some of his adjustments aren't making it down to the player level, the executional level. But at its most basic level, when you're three safeties across deep, what's happening in front of you, all the flim-flammery and the smoke and mirrors, is irrelevant.
They don't care.
I have this deep third is the response to every single thing you're doing. Okay. Now there's a couple of exceptions, but they're tutored on those exceptions. And so, you know, that's what I think is frustrating is to people is like, hey, why can't he do all these cool motions and switches and exploit their coverage? Because the coverage in cover three is I got this deep third. You got the middle third. You got the other third over on that hash. And whatever's happening in front of us, I got this deep third.
It's the equivalent of if you're guarding a point guard at the top of the key that can't mm-hmm. shoot the three. And he's just sitting there crossing you over and doing like all this fancy stuff. And you just stand at the free throw line. You're like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's fancy. That's what they're doing. They're like, yeah, you can do all that. That's fine. Unless you threaten me out here about 20 yards deep, I don't care.
It's the Indiana Jones scene where the guy pulls out the big sword and he's doing all the awesome tricks. Yeah. And then Indiana Jones pulls out the pistol and shoots him and walks off. So are you worried that recent events have derailed your retirement plans? It certainly made us reassess all aspects of ours, and that's why we're proud to offer our listeners a chance to work with David McClellan, a fiduciary financial advisor from Forum Financial. David's practice specializes in financial life coaching and retirement planning. And right now, he's offering free consultations for our listeners if you mention the podcast. As part of this consultation, David can help you understand your financial freedom number and what that means to you in assessing your future financial plans. If you want to build wealth, if you want to make optimal decisions within your financial life, David is someone you need to talk to. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. Once again, that's David McClellan at 312-933-8823. He's located in Austin, Texas, but he's got a nationwide clientele. Do yourself a favor and get some great financial advice for free and see if you might want to work with Mr. McClellan. I think you'll be happy with your phone call. In a way, it's almost like the basketball analogy. It's also zone. So the guy's doing all that stuff at the three-point line and he can't shoot. So you're just standing in your zone going, hi.
Yeah.
Are you going to try to dribble towards me? Because we're in a zone, and we've got rules, and we're going to pick you up. So
you mentioned rules too, and I think it was Rod that may have said it on here in the post game or somewhere else. It is the 3-3-5 is a lot newer than I guess I thought in my head, like in terms of football evolution. So I don't know if anybody really knows how to break the rules consistently, because stressing a defense is about putting someone in conflict with what their rules are, right? You know, I think it's still kind of new enough to where it's not right, and I agreed 100% with him on that. I was like, that's a really good point. I never really thought about that.
So a few things. So there are some rules for that defense, and there are ways to beat them. So the most common is 4 verticals. You spread the field and you go 4 verts. Now, Texas did some versions of that. We were also using tight ends. And Ewers kept throwing to the tight end that was doubled.
We had one force in there to Gunnar Helm. I was like, if we're going to force it into a tight end and double coverage, I don't think that's the one. But
no, probably not. So 4 verts causes those 3 guys back there to make a decision because you can't carry all those routes. So you end up with what you saw on the should have been a PI on Easton Gibbs.
Yes.
That linebacker was forced to carry Jatavion Sanders up the seam because they know that if they run 4 verts on 3, a guy's open, right? It's just math. So your linebackers have to carry and your linebacker should be at a disadvantage to a tight end, right?
I know the player you're talking about. I want to get your opinion on this because we had a disagreement watching the game live.
Sure.
Was that the correct place to throw that ball? If you're throwing it, not correct decision. If you're throwing that ball to Sanders, is that the correct place to throw it?
Are you saying like throw it into the linebacker's back?
No, I'm saying do you try to funnel him to the middle like he did? Or do you throw something almost like a fade back shoulder stop type situation where Sanders can potentially stop, spin, or use his height advantage there.
And then the interference is guaranteed probably, right? Yeah, that's probably the way you throw that ball.
I mean, I don't – if you're going to lead him in the middle, it wasn't a bad throw. Me and a buddy that I was watching with it had differing opinions, put it that way.
I guess the issue was there was a safety over the top.
Well, and that's the other thing. I'd have to go back and watch the All-22 and see what – I mean, there may be a visual there that's like, well, no, you can't throw that back shoulder. You have to – try to get it over the middle because there's a window over the middle, obviously. I mean,
yeah, that was interesting. So the other part of the 3-3-5 is those 3 safeties across are defending from depth, meaning if you can hit someone either in the short passing game on the run underneath those linebackers or just past them, because those linebackers are dropping effectively into a 3 across as well. If you can get good protection and hit a guy on the run in a seam, then those safeties have to tackle from depth, or you can run the ball. And so it's much harder to support the run and fill the gap if you have to run 15 yards than if you have to run 9. And so that's just basic football math, right? The more space and green a skilled position player has to put a move on you, the more you're in trouble as a defender. So, you know, I think there's exploitations of it, but I think there's something in translation that's there are. I mean, I'm pretty confident Sark's making the appropriate adjustments. Mm-hmm. I think there's something in executional translation that's not making it to the field level. And I'm not sure if it's a speed issue, like we're not making our adjustments fast enough, or if it's a player processing issue.
Could be an yeah. There's a lot of option routes in his offense, and maybe we're not choosing the correct one.
Well, so maybe the response to that three across is actually the dumber offense, which is a box count handoff, or if they start to creep, then it's a stop route or a go route.
Right.
Right. And you kind of dumb it down with them and then let your players play fast. But yeah, I mean, we're kind of doing a lot of theorizing here, and I don't want to try to get too esoteric because we're not exactly, we don't have a whiteboard in front of us to show everybody.
Right. But, yeah, absolutely.
But that is kind of the crux of it. And that's why it's an interesting defense. It also gets the next level of it is when people start to blitz out of it. Right. Because then your picture gets muddy and you got to make a quicker decision. I got to compliment our pass protection, except for one sack, was excellent. And Wyoming blitzed 9 or 10 times, and we picked it up, no problem at all.
Yeah, that's the only one I remember where they kind of went amoeba, and we just turned the guy loose. And I think that I want to say it was like right after a switch out of personnel as well. So,
yeah, Cole Hudson goes out, DJ Campbell comes in, Christian Jones had a guy outside of him. And an end lineup on him. Christian Jones made a line call saying, hey, I've got the farthest guy out, the blitzer. You got the end because he's going to stunt inside. It's exactly what the end did. And DJ Campbell was like, whoa. And then he ends up pushing the guy into Ewers, which was pretty amusing.
Jones was pretty quick to point that out. So I was fairly confident it was not his error.
No, it was not. He made the call. You could tell.
But other than that, you're correct.
They did a good job. Particularly Caden Connor, Majors did a good job inside on those tackles on pass pro. I didn't feel like run blocking got really going until the fourth quarter, but that's also when we really committed to running the ball.
Yeah, I think that's kind of when the attitude matched up with
intent.
Yep. It almost kind of mirrors the comment of what I was saying about the D line earlier. Like, I think the run blocking was probably correct decisions early, but I don't know how nasty it was on wanting to actually like finish the play and bury somebody.
Yeah, so there's a whiteboard aspect to it. Are you blocking the right guy? There's also a, hey, like this
move
is a fight. This is
move
a fight.
This guy.
Screw up the dude across from you. Make him tap out.
And yeah, I don't think there was a whole lot of busts. I just think it was a different attitude when we started getting it rolling.
And I felt like they stayed on their blocks longer. I felt like I'd like to see us start that way. In terms of slow starts, Ewers, 8 of 17 for 57 yards at the half. Texas was 0 for 6 on third down. Ewers' longest completion in the first half was a 16-yard swing pass to Keelan Robinson.
Rapping.
Not the Quinn we saw against Bama.
Yeah, no. There's too much talent on that field for that to be the case, especially again. I don't care how good the defense is playing.
Do you like why the drops? Why everyone?
I think it goes back to the why the fall starts. It just we all. I mean, they can catch. We've seen them do it.
Yeah,
it's not like it's a, you know, hey, man, this guy repeatedly does this. It's probably a – I don't know. It's a focus thing. Maybe they came out too hyped. I don't know. It's not what I saw, but
– I didn't see, like, too hyped as a problem.
No, that's not what I saw, but I don't know what's going on inside a 20-year-old's mind either. So,
yeah, when I was 20, I didn't know what was going on in my own mind.
Yeah, so maybe that was an issue, but I don't the drops. I don't think we have an issue with guys that can't catch. It's just weird.
Let's speculate wildly with a few data points.
That's what we do.
All right, that is kind of the name of the podcast. Yeah. Do they focus better on the road? Maybe.
there's proof to that effect this year.
We got one data point.
It was definitely not the case last year.
No, but so I'm wondering if maybe there's a like an intensity focus of like, hey, we're on the road. This is just us. Maybe we'll see against Baylor in the home opener, right? Road Big 12 opener, I should say.
To your point there, there's been a lot of talk about this us against the world type deal.
Yeah.
That could kind of permeate your thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, like, maybe so.
Maybe they've embraced the fact that people hate them so much that's their trigger to focus is people yelling at them and not with them.
I guess my point is I'm talking to the baseball athlete trying to figure out all the bullshit psychology stuff that you guys love and like live in that world. Whereas football world is more like attack, right?
Yeah, thinking back on it, sometimes I think it may be a little easier to get dialed in if you know you're in a hostile environment.
Yeah.
I always enjoyed it more if obviously things went well, but
yeah, exactly.
But if you were on your game in a hostile environment, that, I mean, that's probably one of the most satisfying feelings out there. So
yeah,
I don't know. It's an interesting thought. I never really thought about that, but I mean, it almost mirrors what we did last year at home in the two non big games as well, though. So I don't know. I think some of it too is, I think there was a lot in this game plan early that may have seemed a little bit more like we were practicing things instead of trying to go out and, I think they were thought we were going to be better at them, but I don't think the intent was, hey, we're going to run these plays to go out and get a 14-0 lead. And then, you know, I think there was a, let's look at this and see, you know, just kind of my thoughts on it.
We need to shelve those plays or do more work on them.
I would agree.
So
I just think Ewers sees things better, especially in the zone concepts, if it's a spread look.
Yeah, almost. I mean, I think we know that now definitively. I think that's just the case. I think he sees the field better, and I still think he feels more comfortable with pre-snap reads of sort of where he's going with the ball rather than reading it on the fly. And I think that's a function of Texas high school spread DNA in general.
I would agree with that. But
like, so if you go watch Colorado State, or you watch Shedeur Sanders in any of these games, he has a real pocket presence and he sees the field. And he sees it both pre-snap and post-snap. I don't think there's a lot of, and he's got pretty average traits, I mean, in terms of his arm, but that's kind of his superpower. And I don't think there's a lot of college quarterbacks who see the field that way.
I would say that, yours is a sophomore. I mean, I know, yeah, he was at Ohio State for a year, but I mean, he wouldn't get any meaningful reps there. That don't count that. I mean, there's probably not many sophomores across the nation that I can think of or remember where you're like, man, this guy really good moving read to read. Like that normally doesn't happen until later on in the game, right? Especially in an, especially in our offense is, I mean, I'm not going to say it's not quarterback friendly because I don't know it, but it's not the spread, you know, the hurry up spread where you're counting and, okay, I'm going to throw it to this guy.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about us is that the challenge for our offense is not the athletes they're going against, it's the scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And usually for most offenses, their challenge is the athlete across from them being better than they are, not the scheme per se.
So you're right on that. And I did have a comment on this that I was thinking about the other day. Because Sark's mentioned it now 2 to 3 weeks that the defense we faced wasn't the one we saw on film, and this was a Herman staple as well.
Yes.
We didn't see that on film. Okay, if at this point we have to expect that people are going to run a junk defense at us or something they don't do because of what you said, it's got to be a scheme. We can't beat them with our pleval, right? So we identify our simplest run plays rule-wise to where if they line up in an over, under, put a nose tackle, bare front, I don't care. If I run X running play, I feel really confident that if they show up in any of 7 defenses, we know what to do. And that's how we start the game.
Yes.
Same thing with our passing plays. Because at this point, people that aren't as talented as you are going to do that. So let's not run the play where, hey, I think they're going to come out in a 3-3-5 over whatever. If they line up in that, we're going to crease them and go. Like, let's go with the base stuff that we can block all 12 potential fronts we could see.
Co-signed. I agree. And that actually gets back to something that I commented on in my post game on Inside Texas. But our run game, it's not timed up really well.
It looks clunky.
It looks clunky, and you didn't see a rhythm to it until the fourth quarter, frankly. And I think that's part of it, Randy, because I notice on plays, there are guys doing okay, but you'll notice a guy, like, so for example, on a goal line play, DJ Campbell pulls, and instead of going up the field and hitting the first enemy jersey he encounters, he doubles an end who's superfluous, who's already being blocked, and he runs across a Wyoming defender who runs through the through the hole and tackles Jonathan Brooks. If he just literally gets his body in front of that guy, Jonathan Brooks squirts through for a touchdown. So I see a lot of stuff like that where the run game isn't super coordinated. And, you know, you could point to youth and all that. Man, like, by your fourth or fifth game, there's high school players that have got that pretty much figured out. Like, you don't double the guy. Your job as the guard is to turn up and hit the first enemy jersey. Like, that's not super hard. And so I think, you know, Kyle Flood, like, he has a good rep. I think that his rep needs to be matched by his offensive play in terms of the coordination of the offensive line, the run game specifically. We saw significant strides since Rice in pass protection. Mm-hmm. I want to see similar strides in the run game. And if we do that, to your point, Randy, let's get that one play, counter gaps, inside zone. I don't care. Let's get that one play, duo. I don't care what it is.
Whatever it is. Yeah.
And let's just know it cold against every front.
Yeah. What did we do best? Which maybe they're still trying to figure that out. I don't know. Yeah. You would think that they would know it by now, but maybe not. You better figure it out quick if you don't.
Yeah.
But yes, 100%. I mean, it could be a situation where yours walks up to the line and it's like, I have never seen this before in my life. Oh, yeah. I'm supposed to check to
duo.
Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Well, and also that buys you time with productive offense.
Yes.
So the coaches on the sideline can figure it out.
Right. Are you probably going to, that's probably not going to be a 4-yard, 75-yard drive or 4-play, 75-yard drive with 15-yard runs chunked throughout it. But you'll see, you know, if you're moving the chains, you'll see 10, 11 plays and eye in the sky can start working on, okay, hey, this is what they're doing. Now let's figure out the rest of the game plan based upon that.
100%. I co-sign this. This is good. And I got to think we've got a bunch of professional football coaches. So I have a feeling that conversation probably happened Sunday afternoon, if I'm guessing.
Yeah. I hope so. I would think so.
I do too as well. Because Baylor, you talked about junk fronts. Hey, let's play the theme song for Sanford and Son. Because we're about to see some junk. Like, it's coming and they're going to blitz with it. Like, what do they have to lose?
Yeah, no, it's he's going to try and do about everything he can possibly do.
Yeah, and the beauty of that is when a team comes out in a novel defense, they haven't played that defense either. And so what they're trying to do is use novelty and aggression to get you wrong-footed. If you respond to it and you block up that little crazy amoeba blitz, there's going to be a dude running wide open down the middle of the field. That's the trade-off. And so you can really punish some of that. And once most defensive coordinators are pretty risk-averse, once they see you put that on film, that you're punishing that stuff, they back off, man. They really back off. So, you know, something to think of. I do have to comment, 31-10. Xavier Worthy has a great punt return. We're inside the Wyoming 40-yard line. 6 minutes on the clock. We're running out the clock with Jaden Blue. The most important thing at this point, Randy, is what?
holding on to the football, because
it's
the
actually
last thing that he was told before he went on the field was, hey, they're going to try and strip you every chance they get.
So from a football sense, you're correct. The real answer is my cover.
I didn't think
Texas,
about that.
See, Texas is they are a 28-point favorite. It's 31-10. We're inside their 40. There's 6 minutes on the clock, Randy. He's already shown he'll throw a pick six.
And Paul's Maserati payment is at stake.
We need to get a touchdown, so at least I get a push on the cover. All right? By the way, if Wyoming still wants to be competitive, when they get the ball back after that touchdown, they might put it in the air, and we might get more points. Why don't you're thinking selfishly about football and what's best for the team.
Yeah.
Why don't you think about what's best for your podcast partner?
How dare I? How dare I? That's an excellent point, though. You're right.
That kind of selfishness that you just displayed is why Blue fumbled. Not thinking about the gambling consequences to me personally. And now my son's not going to go to college.
We get you hooked back up.
That's right. Hey, idiocy aside, Jaden Blue had a real opportunity there with Baxter out particularly. And they didn't want to put more wear on Brooks. He had 21 carries, right?
Yep.
Blue has an opportunity there to get 8 carries in a row and finish out the game on a tired defense that was starting to tap out. Yep. And he did not secure the ball. Hey, man, mistakes happen. But,
But consequences happen also.
Consequences also happen. And that was an opportunity for Blue to work his way into like the regular rotation with Baxter. And we don't know Baxter's status for Baylor.
No, you don't. And it doesn't help that the guy that would be perceived to be behind him looked pretty good in his role.
Savion Red?
Yep.
Let's discuss that. I would say he was effective twice. One time I was pleased with how he addressed his opportunity. The first time he got the Red Cat snap and dance shimmied along the first down marker.
He was setting that guy up to cut back inside, Paul.
That's so stupid.
In no way did I yell at the TV screen, get up the field. No way that happened. I was 100%, I was 100% okay with him running sideways half a yard short of the first down line to set up the block to cut inside.
So he had an immediate gap on that play where he could have gotten 4 yards, right? But
no,
he's
right.
Thinking, I can bust this. I'm going to be a hero. And if someone had come from deep and run support like a missile and rocked him right on that line as he's going laterally, we're freaking not converting that. And everyone's throwing stuff at their television.
Yeah,
so Savion, I think he got talked to because that second run was a little more authoritative.
Yeah, patience is a good thing, not in that situation.
No, not at all. But that was hilarious. Good for Savion. I think that's a useful role. I'm going to say that I prefer the Red Cat to Quinn Ewers quarterback sneak.
Can it?
Let's
anything
let's not...
anything where Ewers goes under center is out of the playbook.
He is not a quarterback sneak quarterback.
No, get it out of the playbook.
Yeah, he is not. He's a slightly built guy, right? And let's just say that that's not in his DNA. Like, I don't think he's built for it, but also I don't think he knows how to do it.
No, he just doesn't look comfortable taking a snap. Even in the goal line stuff we ran, like, let's just shorten up the gun to like a 3 yard gun and go pistol or something, because it doesn't look clean. It talk about clunky. That it's not. I don't like it. I don't like it.
Yeah, he doesn't like taking a center snap. So I don't know if you know this. This is great UT lore of like stupidity of our dark days. But there was a talented quarterback named Donovan Forbes. Do you remember that guy?
No.
So Donovan was a talented dude, pretty athletic, big arm, but not always like the mental part. And he also played in an era where Texas was not great for quarterbacks necessarily, the McWilliams era. And around his junior year at Texas, they're watching him in practice take snaps because he always had trouble with the center snap. He'd fumble them and he'd have weird like bobbling it coming out. And a guy finally looked and realized he was taking the center snap like this. And I'm holding my hands up sideways.
Yeah.
Like you're choking someone instead of like this, which is where you put your upper hand up against the center's butt and your bottom hand receives the ball. He had been doing that all through high school and through 3 years at Texas before finally someone noticed – he wasn't taking center snaps correctly.
That doesn't speak very well to the center or coaching.
Butt being the operative word, you should feel the pressure on your butt in a different part.
You would think so.
Yeah, it's intriguing. So maybe Quinn Ewers is taking his center snaps sideways.
I'll have to go back and watch the game, do a little closer look.
It's a little more close up on Jake Major's butt than I want to do, but you know, that's the kind of research that we do for you people.
Absolutely.
All right. Any closing thoughts on the Wyoming Cowboys, or any thoughts on the college landscape more broadly of what went down on Saturday?
No, nothing on the game really. Just, you know, 21-point win. Everybody woo-saw a little bit. I know it didn't look like it. We wanted it to, but it's still 3-0 going into Big 12 play. I just don't want to continue to. I don't want to see it continue.
Did you say woo-saw?
Yeah, woo-saw.
What does that mean?
Bad Boys, I think, the movie where Martin Lawrence has a severe anger problem and that's his calm down word.
He has to say woosah.
Yeah, he just goes woosah.
Wow, okay.
I think that might be right, maybe. That's what it is. And no, I don't know if it's a real thing or not, but it's from a movie.
Did Bad Boys win an Oscar?
Go ahead, sorry.
Did Bad Boys win an Oscar?
Should have. No, it did not.
Oh.
Landscape wise, the jacked up weekend.
It was crazy. Yeah, it was very jacked up. Michigan has not covered in three consecutive games.
I think they're just trying to get through it. But yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Apparently they're running the slowest pace in college football.
I believe that.
They're running the entire play clock before they take a snap. Is this like their subtle protest that Harbaugh's not there?
It's a protest, and maybe they're thinking that, hey, if we run the least amount of plays possible, we go into Big Ten play healthier than we would have.
That's actually not a bad take on that. But hey,
I mean, I think they know they were going to win all those games, so I don't think they're trying to kind of go back to what I was saying about Sark here. I mean, which I know it got a little dicey there for a bit, but maybe they're just trying to get through it.
Well, I will say this. Sark doesn't care about the style points at the end of the game.
No. And they don't matter anymore. They don't matter near as much anymore.
They may, but we'll have to see. We'll put a pin in that for a future podcast. But
it's not BCS era.
No, it's not BCS era. And we're not, you know, having Art Briles vote us down purposely to screw us over and all that bullshit. One more reason to repay Baylor for their nonsense. But one thing that I did notice in that game, obviously, is a lot of second and third teamers on defense on Wyoming's last drive. And, you know, Wyoming could have kicked a field goal there. They could have, you know, whatever. To Craig Bowles' credit, he kind of got the coaching, like, hey, man, be cool. And Bowles, like, all right, we're not going to kick a field goal. They've got third teamers in there. Like, we get it. The game's over. Let's wrap this up. I know people sometimes are like, let's send a message. Put in the first team defense. You know, aside from the injury risk, you do want to get these guys playing time. It does benefit them. It really does. Not only in terms of like a carrot in terms of their effort, but also it helps to get into a football game. Like, you just get more used to it, and it's not so big a deal when you end up having to start a year or two from now. You've already played 300 snaps of football, right?
And to Paul's point, you weren't going to cover anyway, so it didn't matter.
That's the bigger point, Randy, because if it was 38-10,
I'm with you now.
I'd be going apeshit about all that.
Where is DeAndre Sweat?
Hey, speaking of covering, every week this year, Lane Kiffin, late in games, is making decisions specifically to cover for Ole Miss.
All right, so I got one more point, and then I got to get out of here.
All right.
Did you see the Iowa game?
I watched none of it, but I know they tried to get Brian Ferentz some
go back points. And watch the last like 5 minutes.
So just very quickly, because Randy has to go, Brian Ferentz has a contract that he must average 25 points per game or he will be fired at the end of the
season.
Doesn't
matter. They can go 14-0.
And by the way, defensive points count.
Don't count.
Special teams. No, they do count.
Oh, they do count. Damn.
His total counts. So that helps him, right?
That definitely helps him.
But so far this year, he is under that benchmark. And so they played a scrub directional, and they were like, what, running hurry up at the end of the game?
Trying to score. Yeah.
So stupid. What a, unbelievable. All right.
This is a dumb contract in general, but yeah, that was hilarious.
We had a ho-hum slate of college football last weekend, but you know what? The college football is about to be freaking awesome this weekend. And not just starting Big 12 play, but also just Ohio State, Notre Dame, just Ole Miss, Alabama, like all sorts of awesome games. So I'm looking forward to it. For Randy Boone, I am Paul Wadlington saying, hook 'em.
Hook 'em, everybody.
Do you need a realtor in Central Texas? Of course you do. We all need a realtor in Central Texas. Even those of us who live in Dallas or Houston or San Francisco or Denver, Colorado, you need to go to Central Texas anyway. And the reason is Laura Baker is a fantastic realtor. She's great at what she does. She's a member of the elite Andy Allen team for Keller Williams. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. Talk with Laura if you're thinking about putting your house on the market. This is a great time to get market comps. If you're looking to buy in the market, you need all the help you can get. Call Laura, and it's 512-784-0505.
Interest rates are up, and the market is tumultuous. And now more than ever, you need the best darn possible mortgage broker working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow, and you can reach him at 832-557-1095, or you can go to mortgagesbygabe.com. What makes Gabe so unique? Well, he's incredibly bright. He's a UT grad. He's got a law degree. He's been in the mortgage industry for over 20 years, and he is a true mortgage broker. What does that mean? It means he can shop for the best deal at over 80 different lenders and find you the terms that best suit you. Most mortgage guys you talk to won't reveal that they have exactly one size fits all for you and exactly one conduit to get your loan. If you are in these hyper-competitive markets and you're in these markets that are frankly gotten a lot less friendly to the consumer, you need the best possible person working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow. He has our full endorsement. You can reach him at 832-557-1095.